The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Ready. It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 144 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week I've got a real treat in talking with Howard Shapiro, creator of The Hockey Saint, a book that's going to be available come October. He's also written a graphic novel called The Stereotypical Freaks. The Hockey Saint has to do with a subject that's near and dear to my heart, and that's friendship. We talk a lot about that and how the book came to be and what we can expect from him in the future. I always love variety, and this is a good example of that. We've got a lot to get to, so let's get to it. I want to welcome to the podcast Howard Shapiro, creator of graphic novels including The Stereotypical Freaks and most recently The Hockey Saint. How are you doing today, Howard?
I'm doing good. How about yourself, Wayne?
Pretty good. I just got done reading The Hockey Saint not too long ago, and I really liked it. So why don't we dive into that before we hit some other stuff? Well, why don't you talk a little bit about what The Hockey Saint, which is a graphic novel, what's that's all about?
Sure. Yeah, it's actually a lot of fun to do. My third hockey book, I did a kid's book, a kid's picture book that had a hockey theme, and then sort of a sequel, quasi-sequel to that, which was just a middle grade novel because I just wanted to kind of get out of sort of the kids' illustrated books. And so I went a couple books later. I sort of went back, I guess, in the way to the roots of doing hockey books. Even though, again, I don't think The Hockey Saint's really a hockey story per se. It's not about necessarily a team that wins or scores goals. It's actually about the best player in the world, really. I call him an anti-Sidney Crosby, who is somebody who's sort of been given this mantle of being the face of the league or the league poster boy, if you will. And he, sort of like in Bob Dylan fashion, doesn't want that title. He just wants to play hockey, and he loves the game a lot, and he sort of sequesters himself because he just doesn't want to play the game, give a soundbite answers to things and things like that. So he's, like I said, sort of like the anti-Sidney Crosby, and he has people sort of interpret his moves and his attitudes and things like that, which, again, he's completely different than what the perception is. But, again, one of the reviews I got, a pre-release review, actually had really hit the nail on the head, and it's like it's not necessarily about hockey. It's about many issues, but it just has a hockey, I guess there's an overall hockey theme, but it's not really about hockey. And I almost want to play both ends of the street where I have a pretty good audience who have read my hockey books, which I appreciate and I'm glad to do that. But it has hockey in it, in the title and so forth, and I don't want to alienate those guys, but it's not necessarily a hockey story. So I hope it doesn't turn people off. It's like, oh, I don't know anything about hockey. I don't like hockey. So I like to think of it as being a book that would appeal to a lot of people. But yeah, many your hardcore graphic novel fans, I just think it's got a little bit for everybody, hopefully.
Mm-hmm. I was reading somewhere that this is actually what you're calling Volume 2 of the Forever Friends trilogy. The first one was The Stereotypical Freaks, which I mentioned previously, and this is the second one of that. Do you want to talk a little bit about what you're trying to accomplish with this trilogy?
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, that's a great question. It's a slight little bit of a marketing thing. A guy I met at a conference said, it really helps if you have, when you're doing your books, to make it out like it's a series. So, this is the sixth book I've done, and really the same character, the lead character, whose name is Tom Leonard, has sort of been in every single one of the books. And he's sort of my doppelganger, for lack of a better word, from when he was a young child up till now, where he's in his 20s. So what I did with The Stereotypical Freaks is I had him in his teenage years, And this is sort of a continuation of that. And then the next book, which will be the final one, and I'm really going to put him to rest, is when he's at his later stages of life. So, and the Forever Friends comes actually from a part of the song Backstreets by Bruce Springsteen, who's one of my favorite artists. I love his writing. I've been a big fan of his for 30-some years. The line is Forever Friends in the song Backstreets, which is on Born to Run. And a lot of the stuff I've done over the years has been about friends, friendship. To me, it's like a never-ending thing you can talk about, and it's just been a great source of, you know, of material for me, and an area I love to explore. So I just kind of extended it by coming up with this Forever Friends, because the next story and the final one will have sort of a wrap-up of all the friendships that were developed over the years and where they went. So anybody who read the first book, Stereotypical Freaks, or even any Hockey Player of Life, any of the things I've done before, it'll be a nice little conclusion, and then hopefully I'll move on to other things. But yeah, it's really to put a wrap on the whole thing, and hopefully somebody has read the last one, we'll read Stereotypical Freaks, we'll hopefully read this, and hopefully see how it ends next time.
Mm-hmm. Now, I have to say, I was really intrigued when I saw this Forever Friends thing, because I honestly have come to believe that one of the things that's really a lost art in today's society is friendship.
I couldn't agree with you more. It really has been. And these guys, it's the real thing. You know, it's like real friendship. It's not based on status or anything like that. They enjoy each other's company. Mm-hmm. Thing is, like when I write, I always think of writing as being, you can put, you know, situations in life that you might have gone through where you can change it. You know, it's kind of neat. Like, oh, I can relive that, and this time this is going to happen, or this thing that was bad happened, I'm going to make it good, or this thing that was good, and I'll make it bad, whatever it might be. And I wish I would have had friends like this when I was in school, or even now, I mean, because they really like each other and they enjoy each other's company. And there's no, like I said, there's no boundaries. There's no, you're doing this or I'm doing that, or financial, whatever it might be. When they're in high school, that in the first book, they become friends because they have this shared love of music. And that's why I always kind of thought friendship was. It's like you have a shared love of whatever it might be, sports, music, books, literature, whatever it might be. So, yeah, but I agree with you. Yeah, I mean, it's it just seems like it is. It's kind of a lost thing these days. But I want to be friends with them if I was in the world.
Because I hate to say this, but a lot of the media, and I'm talking about television and particularly movies, they always say that any kind of relationship is sexually based. And I just don't buy that, you know, what they're selling with that, because I've been part of a science fiction Star Trek group for a long time. And in that group, there's a Buddhist, somebody who's Jewish, somebody who's Wiccan, somebody, you know, some of us Christian, somebody who's atheist. You've got black, white, yellow in between all in there. And the thing that draws us together is our enjoyment of science fiction. And, you know, as I was reading this book, I was reminded very much of how important friendship is and how little we have of it today. And my hope is that people will read it, if for nothing else, is to kind of rekindle that desire for, and not sexual desire, but the interest in finding people that you share things with and coming to understand and know each other as a result.
I think that's great. And that's, you know, what you're saying is exactly, you know, I mean, you guys were brought together by love of science fiction and Star Trek and so forth. And that's what these guys, you know, there's one kid who's African-American. There's one kind who's kind of pudgy. There's one who, Tom, who's kind of like your sort of all-American kind of kid. And then the fourth member was a foreign exchange student. So, you know, I mean, if you couldn't take four more diverse kids. I was talking with somebody the other day, you know, when we were talking about sports, and I said the beauty of sports, which has kind of got lost over the years, is that, you know, in one of the stations here did a commercial with this. They had a guy who had a mohawk, and then he's sitting next to a guy at a hockey game who was like a CEO type, you know, businessman, had a suit on, and the team scored, and then they kind of look at each other kind of like, you know, kind of harsh at each other, and next thing you know, then they start hugging and they're cheering. And I really like it, because it's one of the beauties of sports, can be, at least, it breaks down the barriers. You know, you saw that with the World Cup and things like so. In your own little world, if you can meet somebody or one or two people who, you know, who are like that, who have shared interests, and, you know, everything kind of else goes out the window. And I think it's great, like something like you were saying, you know, that group is that's what it's all about. And, you know, you have a bond with those folks, and that's something very strong, and that, you know, all the other differences can kind of go away. And then you get to know each other and learn more about each other. And I think that's tremendous. And that's sort of one of the goals, too, I had, you know, hopefully when more so for kids, you know, high school kids and so forth, read it. Hopefully they'll, especially stereotypical freaks, you know, kind of realize that you can't just judge a book by its cover.
Well, I was touched particularly by the fact that Jeremiah Jackson, even though he, as you're describing him, is the best hockey player in the world, he doesn't have much in the way of real friendship. In fact, there's a relationship he has to kind of mask because he doesn't want information about that getting out. And I found that so interesting that this book, you're right, is more about relationships than it is about hockey per se.
Exactly.
And I was really touched by the fact that he bumps into this guy accidentally, and I'm sure he's surrounded by people who are desperate to hang around with him, but he knows that they're none of them are really going to be his friends like this guy will be.
Yeah, that's a good point. It's just one of those things, I think, that I had it planned sort of in my head and for a while how they were going to kind of meet. And that kind of worked out really nicely. It came together really kind of neat. And then, yeah, I mean, it kind of alludes to it a little in the story how he's has some friends on the team, but they're not, you know, really good friends. They're just sort of people he works with, per se. And he's sort of been in, I wouldn't say sheltered, but, you know, he's sort of been off on an island by himself, and he really doesn't have a really good friend. And then so they kind of meet, and you know, their sort of shared interest was this kind of retro hockey game, video game. And that's sort of, and they also share, you know, another, I don't want to give it away, a spoiler type thing, but they share something else that happened. And, you know, it's, and they realize, hey, you know, and the friendship develops. One thing I had in mind when I was doing it, music is a huge influence on all of my writing, is there was a Kiss song years and years ago that Paul Stanley did, and I forget the title, but it was like he couldn't meet anybody or know anybody because he wasn't sure if they were interested in meeting him, the person, or him, the rock star. And, you know, I kind of wanted to use that a little bit, too. Like, Jeremiah is very sequestered and kind of afraid of having relationships, you know, that kind of thing. So one of the things I really liked about the book was the friendship that they developed and how they kind of came together from really not knowing each other at all, complete strangers, and just how it developed. And they kind of each sort of learned things about each other. So, yeah, it was kind of a neat thing to do, explore that.
Well, one of the things I was particularly touched by is the fact that we do discover, descriptions I'll mention, is that he's not necessarily the perfect person, this Jeremiah Jacobson is, that Tom might like him to be. And so that causes some troubles in their friendship. But in the end, they seem to be able to get past that. You know, and there's a message in that for us today, is that we have to let each other be human. And even if you're somebody who's like a superstar, the one thing I've noticed when I've had the opportunity to meet people who are name people, who, you know, names people recognize, the thing they don't want you to do is to go when you're around them and stuff like that. What they want you to do is they want you to treat them like real beings, you know, instead of people up on pedestals. And that one of the things I liked about Jeremiah Jacobson was that he's really very honest with Tom about that. What he's really looking for is someone to hang out with.
Exactly, yeah. That's really true. And, you know, it was a conscious decision to shape him that way. And, yeah, I mean, it's interesting because there's a part where he says, and again, I don't want to get too much into it, give away some things again, but, you know, he kind of alludes to that where it's like, just treat me like everybody else. Like, I'll give you an example. I was listening to this show the other day and on the Bruce Springsteen XM channel, and these people are talking, and it's like, well, oh, how does he do it? How does he make it? It was just like this kind of like hero worship, and you know, we have that a lot in sports, and like Derek Jeter is an example, you know, coming up here with his retirement. And you know, I think the media and people, you know, fans or whatever, they elevate these guys into like this stratosphere. It's kind of foolish. And the one thing about hero worship is something that I mean, it touches on towards the end, but I mean, what he says, and again, I don't want to give it away, is to me is something that's very apropos, because you put whoever it might be, even somebody who, you know, if you have a father or a grandfather or mother, father, whatever, whoever the hero might be, I mean, everyone in the end is still human, and if they make a mistake, or when they make a mistake, I should say, or an error, I mean, you don't just like, oh, well, they completely let me down. Oh, I feel, you know, how could they do that? Oh, that's, you know, how could they do that and let us down? And it's like, well, you know, they're human. And that's that's one of the points that I think he really wants to make. And I really love the one line where he said, he goes like, you know, where he looks, and, you know, one of the things he liked when he was growing up was he saw himself in some of these other superstars or players. And, you know, but it's a two-way street. And, you know, it has to come back that same way from people who are fans of his, Jeremiah as a player. I really like that. I really like that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, that whole issue of hero worship. I mean, I think it's great. I had heroes when I was growing up, mm-hmm. you know, Batman, Lone Ranger, you know, mm-hmm. Spider-Man, whatever. But, you know, you always, I think, one of the things I've told my kids is you have to realize that, you know, everybody's going to make mistakes and make errors, and you just can't hold, you know, them to a higher standard because it's just, you know, human nature to mess up.
Mm-hmm. Well, the book is well titled because as we go through the story, he certainly seems to have earned the title of Hockey Saint, Jeremiah has. He does certain things, and I don't want to give away too much about the books, but let's just say he gets involved in the community, and this is where Tom kind of comes and helps him out on some levels, is that not only is he a well-known name, but he doesn't do things for the glory of things. He does things to help people.
Exactly, yeah.
And, that, of course, the hockey saint, you know, you see all the good stuff before you actually come to discover there are kinks in the armor. And that, I think, was a great way to tell the story, was to build him up a little bit before we get to see some of these other things happen. I do have to say, though, that the end was a great ending, I thought. It brought things together so nicely and made the point that this book, I think, is all about, and you're what we've talked about, and that friendship is important. And that as a person, you actually might be called something like a hockey saint. And you might, to other people, appear that way. But underneath it all, you understand that you're human. And that there are good and bad in you. And you have to be careful to keep everything in straight. Because a lot of people let this stuff go to their heads. Oh, there are comic creators. There are sports people. There are stars, movie stars and stuff, who think that they are the cat's pajamas. Because of what they do. And just because this guy is a hockey saint, the good news is he does temper his own his self-image some, but that doesn't mean he's totally seeing himself in a realistic way. So I just love the way that this book dealt with reality and real issues rather than, because you know, you read Batman and Superman, as much as I love them, it's mostly just a story of people fighting. And for this, to see the interaction and how they interacted and how the relationship shifted from part of the book to part of the book, I thought that was something that I wish more people could get to read, honestly.
I appreciate that, Wayne. That was really nice, and I appreciate the kind words. I mean, going back to something you even mentioned before, it's like, you know, when I first started reading graphic novels, it was all like, you know, I mean, my interpretation of it was like 300 and, you know, stuff that was like hyper-violent and things like that. And so I kind of wanted to, even though there are many others, one that I really loved was called The Big Con. It was a really good story. And that's really what I wanted to do with this and really what I wanted to do. It was great how it came together. And I have a lot of thanks to the person I work with, the editor, Christina, who did a really good job sort of being a good sounding board. And it was nice. Everything kind of came together. So, what you said, I really appreciate it because it was. I think it's a good ending and ties up things and a little bit of a twist in there. And I didn't want to go too far into the, you know, to make it like this massive, you know, like I think that's the other thing. I think it happens a lot in books and movies, especially, you know, you have to have this major, you know, incredible twist. And I think mine's a little more subtle, but I was really happy with it. And I hope folks listening will get a chance to check it out because it was just a lot of fun to do. And I was really happy with the way it turned out.
You mentioned a book, by the way. I will give a quick plug that I really adored. And honestly, you are one of the very few other people I've ever ran into that's actually read The Big Con.
Oh, yeah.
Which a wonderful, wonderful book. It's not The Big C-O-N. It's, if I remember correctly, it's K-A-H-N.
Correct, yeah.
The way Con is spelled. And the basic story is that a Jewish rabbi dies. And when he dies, you discover that, well, he's not everything that he said he was.
Exactly, yeah.
And it's such a fascinating story to see the family get together, and when the truth is revealed, how they react to it. And it was such a wonderful book. I loved it, and I've told people to buy it. And, you know, very few people actually get around to it. But once again, I want to talk about and say The Big Con. If you get a chance to buy that book, I highly recommend it. Very good book. Nice variety if you look a little something different from superheroes. It'll give you a very personal story and about that not to take people always at face value. So I love that book. I'm glad that you liked it, too.
Oh, it's phenomenal. It was really the influence. Neil Clyde, I think, was the writer. And it was a huge, huge influence. The two I read that started with, that got out of the library, Big Con was the first, and then this other one called GarageBand, which is by a French author-illustrator named Gipi, I believe, G-I-P-I. And those were my two, and I read those about 3 months before I actually started getting into the stereotypical freaks. But, yeah, they're just wonderful stories. I just really loved it. And, yeah, they were a huge influence on my writing. And, I couldn't agree with you more and recommend it more. I read it in one sitting. It was that good. So, great, great story.
Same here. I get the same thing. When I got started, I didn't finish until I was done. And it was just one of those great engaging type stories. And I wish more stories were like that, honestly. Why don't we go ahead and switch into talking a little bit about the physically bringing the book together? Because you don't do these through like DC or Marvel. What's the name of the company that you create these graphic novels for?
Yeah, it's called Animal Media Group, Pittsburgh-based publisher, indie publisher, I guess, in some respects. Small. Well, we'll have 5 books out, and just wonderful to work with, and really been a huge help to me and giving me the opportunity to do this because they are expensive. I mean, I more or less self-funded the Stereotypical Freaks. They were kind enough to publish it when the one publishing company I was with or who was going to publish it went sort of out of business. I think they're still in business, but they sort of were closing or downsizing. So, great group of people and just a really wonderful group to work with.
Now, so why don't you talk about the artists, too, because sure. I like the way this art was done. It very much fit the mood of the story, and, you know, when they're playing video games and stuff like that, it's a nice job of showing what's happening as well as getting the facial expressions down so we understand what they're feeling. Do you want to talk a little bit about those people and how you sure. came to work with them on this?
Absolutely, yeah. The illustrator, actually, her husband, her name's Marika. In a way, and her husband's Roberto Zaghi, and he's actually a very highly skilled illustrator, both from Italy, husband and wife. And Roberto is somebody I met on Facebook just because I admired his work so much, and we're pretty good friends, and I was asking him if he would be interested in doing this. And the group that I work with on Stereotypical Freaks was great. Both those guys were busy, and I really wanted to kind of switch things up anyway, just to try somebody new. So Roberto suggested that Marika, who's an illustrator, she has an anime background, but she really had never done a graphic novel. And, you know, we had a couple bumps when we first started, but I knew that once she got sort of in a rhythm, it would go really well. And she did a tremendous job. I think most of the pages, actually, especially towards the end, were basically done in one take. So she really... really got a nice pattern, nice rhythm, and we kind of did usually about 3 or 4 pages a week. And the nice thing was she also was completely dedicated to the book. You know, she made her first priority, which really meant a lot to me. And so for her first time out of the gate, I thought she did a tremendous job. And we were really lucky enough to, through those two, Roberto and Marika, meet Andres Mosa, who is also an Italian illustrator, artist, who did the color work. And he's done a lot of work with DC and Marvel, and just a tremendous, tremendous colorist. I mean, it's somebody who, you know, it's a real skill and a real talent, a real art, and he did a phenomenal job. Really happy to have him on board. He was just tremendous. And the letterer we had was from Calgary. He was actually recommended to me from the letterer who worked on the Stereotypical Freaks, and he did an excellent job as well. Lettering to me, I'm not sure if you agree, maybe the folks out there agree. To me, lettering is sort of like the hidden, sort of like the secret weapon of a graphic novel. You know, it's one of those things you don't, it's almost like the offensive line in a football. It's not really there. Maybe like, you know, the soundtrack of a movie. You know, you don't necessarily know it's there, but when it's really done well, then that's when you don't notice it, but it's still a major component of the whole project. So we had that. And then the cover illustrator, a guy named Neil Gouge from the UK, he's done a lot of work with Judge Dredd. He did a really, really nice job on the covers. One of the things I had in mind, I really wanted to be Jeremiah kind of rushing up against like all these fans and media and all these people sort of coming at him at the center ice, the red line in a hockey rink. And my idea was sort of based on the old, if you remember the Super Friends, Challenge of the Super Friends opening, where they kind of, all the Batman, Superman, all those guys, they're rushing against, you know, Lex Luthor and all the bad guys, and they kind of clash right in the middle. It's kind of a famous opening from way back when, but I really wanted to have that. But he was saying, well, it's not going to really work. You can't really do that on the cover. So that kind of thing. So it was going to be sort of Jeremiah like crashing through the media and fans and whatever. But we kind of went with a nice shot on the front. And we did that a little on the back where there are people holding signs and whatnot. And he's still trying to escape from them. So, but yeah, we're just a great group, really dedicated. And I really couldn't have asked anything more. They all exceeded my expectations tremendously.
Is this available? It's out on Amazon, is it?
It is. It's available for pre-sale. It's not actually coming out till October 14th, but you know, it's available for pre-sale on Amazon. It's also available on the Animal Media Group website, which is animalmediagroup.com. And just click on the tab for books. And any ordered through there, I will be able to autograph and also send along one of our bookmarks and maybe some other free stuff that I can lay my hands on. So that's animalmediagroup.com and then Amazon, and it'll be out October 14th, even though you know, we do have copies now, but the official date's not till October 14th.
Do you know, is this going to be available through comic shops, or is it basically going to be through online things? Are you going to be able to go, like, say, like a local Barnes & Noble or something and be able to get it?
Yeah, that's a good question. I don't think. I mean, it's a possibility. We have distribution. AMG, the publisher, has distribution, but not with Diamond. But it should be available. I'm hoping, actually, in Canada also it'll be available in chapter stores, but mostly online. And it's kind of hard to get in to Barnes & Noble these days, and the comic shops, too. I mean, a lot of them deal with Diamond, and we were just kind of staying away from them just because of the fee structure they have. But hopefully the demand will be there, and you know, we do have distribution, and hopefully they'll be able to, the demand's there, get into those kind of places.
That'd be great, because this is the kind of book that would make some stores that I know really happy. There's a comic book store up in College Park, Maryland called Big Planet Comics, and they're right next to the University of Maryland.
Okay.
And they, this is where I got the Big Con.
Oh, okay.
Was at that store, and they will often go and buy these somewhat away from the superhero books. And I was thinking this would be an ideal book for them to purchase.
Sure, sure.
And I'm sure there's other bookstores that would love to have it because, you know, parents come in and they want to know, well, you know, I'm buying this for my kid and it's a superhero book. What can I get? You know, and if you have something like this, or even for teenagers or something like that, to be able to give out, like, say, when the holidays roll around, and then, might I say, this is a perfect time for it to come out toward later in the year when the holidays are just about to come. That's a great idea on somebody's part. But the thing to me is I would like to see more of these kinds of things like the Hockey Saint in stores that are comic book stores, just because, you know, as much as I love comics and as much as I enjoy comic book movies, and of course there's all of them all over the place, I still think that we need to be, just like we don't eat pizza every day, we need to ingest other kinds of stories just so we can grow in our understanding. And I think the Hockey Saint is something that comic book stores should be seeking out, honestly.
Well, I hope. Yeah, it's a tricky business these days, and it can be a tough business, and as far as the distribution end of it. And, you know, so we're definitely trying to get the word out, and when, you know, doing shows like yours is a huge help. So hopefully folks listening will check out the site, and, you know, if the demand's there, hopefully. You know, the good thing with Animal is that, like I said, they have the distribution channels to get this stuff out, get the book out. So hopefully, you know, again, that will be something that's a possibility, because, yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I was at Midtown Comics in New York City for Book Expo America last year, and you know, you walk through there and you know, you see a lot of different things that you wouldn't normally see. Unfortunately, like Barnes & Noble, they, you know, they're only going to carry most likely like the top of the top, you know, the upper echelon. But hopefully we'll be able to again get the word out, and some of the stores, you know, be interested and get some orders through the distribution channels.
That'd be great, because I think this book is something that really everybody could read and get something out of, with the whole notion of relationships and how I think we're being cheated by some people and some organizations who just think that everything has to do with sex. This to me was a great, profound, touching story that really sex has almost nothing to do with. And I always encourage people to read that when I find those kinds of things.
I appreciate that. Yeah, it's really wanted to gear it towards, you know, kids really like from, you know, 12 maybe even on up could enjoy it. And there's no violence. There's no, you know, sex. There's no, you know, I think the harshest word is one of the guys who says he's going to kick somebody's ass. That's about it. So we really wanted to make it, you know, for a general audience. And again, whether you're a sports fan or not, it's, you know, that's, it's really not what it's about. And that's the way my other books, the ones that dealt with hockey. I mean, It's not about the goals and the wins and things like that, you know, and it's about the relationships and the things you learn from either playing sports, playing, for me, playing hockey specifically, you know, life lessons that you learn and the relationships, whether it's with your parents or guys on your team, things like that. Things that are really important that you take away, not necessarily trophies and kind of inconsequential things like that. It's really about the relationships. And so I appreciate everything you said because that's really what we've been after. And it's great to hear that had an impact on you.
Well, you know, when this is going to come out, I'll have to write a review for MajorSpoilers.com where these things come up, and I encourage people to go and get it now once it becomes, you know, fully available, because, like I say, variety is everything, and I don't think that we get enough of it. So I really am going to encourage people to get into this book. Now, you've mentioned there's going to be the third one coming up. I imagine you're knee-deep into the third one, working on that one. Do you have any kind of schedule as to when that third book's going to come out?
I appreciate it. It's a really good question. I wish. The thing is, when these, before they come out even, you know, there's so much, you know, we're working with a publicist to really get try and get the word out as best we can, and there's a lot of work that goes along with that. So I'm hoping after the first of the year to start, and probably not looking you know, and they take such a long time, again, 3 or 4 pages a week at best. And so it's hopefully be sometime in early 2016. But, you know, I hope next year to really have the whole year to hopefully start writing it once things settle down after it comes out. And then I'm thinking that we're going to work with Andres, who did the color, but he's also a really good illustrator. I think we're going to work with him on both of those. So that's the plan. So some things are going on, but, you know, again, it's a good ways away, unfortunately. Unfortunately, it's 130 pages, 3 pages a week. You have to see what the time frame is. It's it's a long process, and I wish it could go quicker, but I think it'll be worth the wait, and I'm really excited about it. And like Stereotypical Freaks, I mean, that was a 3-year process. There were a couple hiccups with the publishing along the way, but it was a really long process. It was, when it came out, it was like, whew, it was such a relief and such a, so happy when it came out. And to get good feedback. I mean, you know, when you're doing it, you just kind of hope that, again, folks like yourself, you know, the people really like it and enjoy it. And it really touches you deeply when you get some really good feedback. It really, really means a lot. And so I appreciate that. And we'll hopefully, you know, I'm hoping right at the beginning of 2016.
Now I'm going to have to seek out that Stereotypical Freaks book because I have not seen it. I didn't know how to get a hold of it until, I guess, it's out on Amazon and stuff, just like the other stuff. So
exactly.
I'll have to go out there and get after it.
Well, I appreciate that. Yeah, it was a fun book. It was a lot of fun to do. Again, a different cast of characters as far as the production team. Actually, a guy from your neck of the woods, Joe Picar from down in Orlando, did the illustration. Really tremendous. He's actually a pinup artist. But, you know, it was a nice thing for him to be able to do it, some different stuff. So he did a really good job. And, you know, we had a guy who named Ed Brisson who did the lettering, who's now he does a lot of writing. I think he does a lot of stuff with Image now. And so, yeah, it was a great team. And it was a lot of fun to do. And, yeah, that one's a real special story to me. And I still have very high hopes. I want that to be a movie in the worst way. And I'm hoping one day somebody will see that after, you know, as it lies dormant for a while since it's been out since 2012. But, yeah, it was a real special story. So, yeah, if you get a chance to check that out, I'd love to know your thoughts about it.
Okay. Yeah, I'll have to get into it and read it. Is this available on iTunes, or is it only pretty much for the Kindle?
It's on the Kindle. It's iTunes and Kobo as well. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah,
okay.
Because
I have an iPad, not a Kindle.
Oh, okay.
So I'll go out and get it that way.
Absolutely. Yep. Okay. Yeah, it's available that
That'll
way.
Be fine. Now, do these books keep you busy, or do you have other projects that we should be aware of?
No, that's it. It's actually a sidelight. My day job is being an accountant. So this is all, it's a sidelight that takes up a lot of time, but it's been a lot of fun. I've been doing it for about 8 years now, and just a lot of fun, a real great creative outlet, and things like this, when you get the opportunity to do them, really are a lot of fun. And it's a lot of fun to do, and hopefully we'll have a couple more. And it's just been a blast, and get to go to the New York Comic Con coming up to hopefully meet some other folks who do graphic novels. And so, yeah, it's hockey. I mean, I've met so many people through the hockey books that I would have never met before. So it's just been a real nice thing for me sort of later in life. I didn't really start writing until I was in my, I mean, I wrote, but I didn't start publishing until I was in my early 40s. It's been a nice little second act to go along. You know, you do the accounting or the business stuff, which is fine. It's what I do. It's my living. It's great to have the creative outlet also.
I can relate to that. I do office work during the day, and then I do my little podcast and read my comics and enjoy that and get to talk with folks like you about these good things. Yeah. So, well, Howard, I really wish you a lot of success. Keep going with it, because the Hockey Sane is something I'm going to promote, and I'm also going to catch up on the Stereotypical Freaks. And I encourage other people, since Hockey Sane's not going to come out until the fall, to go ahead and get into Stereotypical Freaks so that we can all be ready when Hockey Sane comes out this fall.
I appreciate that. It's not like you have to know one or the other. You know how some sequels go. You really don't have to. Tom's really the only character from the first book that's in it. But there is a little bit of a thread there, but it's not anything that, you know, you have to, that one has to do with the other. They are related, but just in a very small, small way. But yeah, by all means, if anybody check it out, that'd be awesome. And no, it was great to have the chance to talk with you about all this stuff. It's been a lot of fun.
Great talking with you too, Howard.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, from flesh and blood, I can be ignored, I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast, so you can keep reading your comics.
Now at MajorSpoilers.com. And that's it for this episode. We're getting closer to episode 150, so look for something special to happen during that episode. But until then, keep reading your comics.